this is my journey. I am no different from anyone else. And to be able to make that plain to everybody around me sort of allowed some of that pressure to come off. And number two, boy, if God still loved me, I'm not really over concerned about whether you do or not.
Hi, this is Ike Evans of the Hawk Foundation for Mental Health. You're listening to Into the Fold, the Hawk Foundation podcast. Hawk Foundation is a mental health grant-making foundation based at the University of Texas at Austin. You can, to learn more about the things that we've got going on, you can visit us at www.hog.utexas.edu, and HOG is spelled H-O-G-G. With us today is Pastor A.J. Quinton of Diakonos Ministries here in Austin, Texas. He has been a friend of the HOG Foundation since he first became involved with the Austin area African-American Behavioral Health Network, first as a learner, but in the years since, he's really come into his own as an outspoken and forceful advocate for greater mental health awareness on the part of African-American clergy and faith leaders. And so he's here with us today just to share some of his insights and experiences. So Pastor Quinton, yes. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Ike, for the invitation. I am excited about being able to share, to be able to talk about this work that I do and my relationship with the HOG Foundation and the network. I guess for me to really express or to dialogue where we are, how I got here, it is really began with an understanding of what I had dealt with from childhood that finally came at a crashing point in 2007 when my father was dying of cancer. And I hit an extreme wall, just a wall, a mental wall. And about that time, I was attending the conference here in Austin, and I had really did not realize I had experienced what they call now, they call it a nervous breakdown, but no, it was just I had hit that emotional threshold. So I had absolutely nothing left. And I became involved at that time with the HOG Foundation, with the network, and it really began to open my eyes to some things that were right before me, but I didn't understand them. So I didn't understand about the depression and all those things, and before I knew it, I was involved.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, if you could just give, I guess, a narrative overview of what you've been through over the last several years, the highs and the lows. I realize that there's so much that can be said about it.
Right.
And I'm sure that you've had plenty of time to rework the narrative of your own life, but just to give our listeners a sense of where it is that you're coming from and what qualifies you as something of an expert on the issue.
Well, the biggest thing I would say is that my life has been like an uphill race. Okay, with no wheels on the vehicle. And there's a point where it seems like that everyone passes you, but you can't put your hands on why some parts of you work and some parts don't work, or may not work as well. And so I spent a lot of years in a very dark state of mind. I guess the best way to say it, with moments of brilliance, okay, that were cloudy by depression, an inability to really maintain focus and to really just feel good about life. And I got to a point to where I became very weary of that. I have attempted suicide 4 times, and that's 4 planned attempts. And then just kind of led a very self-medicated, reckless life that was really behind the door of faith. And I really became troubled when I started to explore looking for support and answers from the faith-based community, especially clergy, and really finding out that, man, we are in really bad shape. I wasn't the only one. In fact, there was no real platform to address my need and for support. And that's how I got to where that I began to voice it little by little. And the foundation gave me an opportunity to be able to talk a little bit more. But it more importantly spurred me to really begin to study, to become a student, and then to begin the advocacy that I do now. That's sort of how I got here.
Okay. So looking back over the past several years, mm-hmm. is there some specific moment? And I realize, you know, when it comes to anything that's mental health related, you'll have good days and bad days, even once you consider yourself recovered.
Right.
And there'll be those days where you're terrified that you might be backsliding.
Right.
But is there any moment that you would identify as a dividing line between, you know, the you that's in recovery, mm-hmm. And the you that was lost?
Yeah. My father's, as I mentioned earlier, my father was a very strong individual and very strong man of faith. And I remember my father was very, very ill with prostate cancer in final stages. And I, at that moment, I just lost complete grip of reality. It's so much to the point to where I remember him telling me, he said, I went to his bedside as to be his pastor, but I walked away being his son, you know. And at that point, I really looked and said to myself, I'm losing it here. This is not the reality that lines up with what I think is the word of God is saying, or what I see people express and live. Okay, so maybe it's just something wrong with me, right? Instead of the rest of society is okay. And I went through that, and not long after that, right after that, my youngest grandson came to live with us for a while. And I realized when this baby was around me that I was completely out of tune with who I was. And he brought legacy back to my mind and showed me how much of life I wasn't living. And there's a point to where we can do all the faith activities, but it doesn't mean you're living. And all of a sudden I had this little baby that I was holding, that I was around me, and I realized I don't even know who his grandfather is. And yet here I have this person that represents a legacy, and I don't know. I don't know me. What am I gonna do for him? You know what I mean? And I felt like this sense of failure, and I wasn't gonna be up for the job. But I got a little bit excited because maybe things could be different. And that's how I began on the journey of seeking help,
mm-hmm.
yeah, for myself. But that was a dividing line then. One person leaving me, one person entering my world that sort of brought me to a point to where I needed to make some decisions.
Okay, and when you say that, you know, holding your grandson brought legacy back mm-hmm. back to your mind,
right?
Maybe you could say a little bit more about how that ended up being, you know, such a resonant experience. It seems like, you know, everyone they need their own particular signs,
right?
And what made that one such a potent one for you?
Because if I had successfully completed suicide, first of all, I never would have had that experience. The second thing was, is that my earlier days as a part of self-medication, I was a heavy drug user. So, you know, one of my suicide attempts was really overdose, you know. And so I never saw myself having that experience, you know, having grandkids. I really didn't even see my son, you know. I didn't see myself seeing him being an adult, you know. I mean, that's just where I was. So to be able to see all of this come into being was extremely, on the one hand, exciting, on the other hand, challenging. You know, could I handle this? You got to remember, I'd made a complete mess in my, you know, of my life up to that point. I mean, it was just a jumbled, this very fractured picture you know, and I really had not had a complete grips on anything. And so here was a point to where I realized that this is a this young person here, gosh, they're real. I'm touching him. I'm doing this. So this is a real experience. And if this is a real experience here, maybe I need to be able to address something so I can really live this experience instead of just being on the outside looking in, which is where it's been most of my life.
And all this time, you're trying to make a living as a pastor, mm-hmm. and that brings with it so many pressures and expectations.
Yeah, correct.
And even always the risk of judgment should you shirk your responsibilities in some way. And so how intense does that pressure get? And when I say pressure, I mean in particular, you know, the need to put forth this unflappable image, you know, for the, you know, for the benefit of of the flock.
Correct. The pressure is tremendous until you learn to put things in perspective. And so I think the biggest thing is the fact that we don't want to express our reality because, one, we have a sense we're going to let you down. Two, we have a sense you're not going to understand it. Three, we have a sense that you're going to leave me, okay? And four, you're going to tear me down even further by the way you see me. So the reality is that I don't necessarily want to be Superman, but you've made me Superman, okay? And so what I've learned is that I had to go and begin to look at and say, what was most important here? Is it more important for me to survive, okay? Or is it more important for me to have this image, this facade? And remember, you're not doing it intentionally to fool. You're doing it because of the fact you have the shield up, that you call yourself protecting yourself. But at the same time, what you're doing is you're really killing yourself, you know, because you're trying to do that and juggle all these balls. And then, of course, I've always worked. Like, I worked for, you know, Child Inc., Head Start. I've always taught school. I mean, I coached. I did a whole number of things. And the pressure really comes from you. And part of the healing allows you to be able to say, you know what, it is better to be Clark Kent and put the cape on only when needed, okay, than to be Superman all the time. Yeah.
And, I mean, thinking about our people, and by that I mean African Americans.
Correct.
And for our listeners, believe it or not, I'm African American.
yes, you are.
Yeah, I find a reason to say that about every other episode. We talk about our pastors.
Right.
We gossip about our pastors.
Right.
Some of it comes from sincere,
right,
you know, concern.
Right.
And one thing that I've always wondered is how difficult it must be to give a coherent account of why it is that people aren't getting their pastor at his absolute best in a way that doesn't cause them to break faith with you. And what ways of doing that have you come up with over the years?
Well, I mean, one way was, first of all, being transparent, okay, and really coming out and looking at both God's word and from a practical point of view and understanding experience. And by doing that, I began to understand that this is my journey. I am no different from anyone else. And to be able to make that plain to everybody around me sort of allowed some of that pressure to come off, okay? And number two, boy, if God still loved me, I'm not really over concerned about whether you do or not, okay? Because to me, that was a very refreshing thing that I learned. And the other thing was, is how are we really in the African-American community, how are we really going to deal with difficult things if we can't be truthful about them? So if I'm going to be a proponent for truth and speak as a mouthpiece for God, but I can't talk about in reality who I am, those are diametrically opposed to each other. You know what I mean? So for me, I'm like, no, it is better to do that. And one of the ways that I've done is began by bringing people together. I began talking to groups of sitting with men and women and whatever, and begin to talk about these things, and then developing a program that I have, writing a book that I'm working on completing, and having conversations with my own family about things that I see, and we talk about and begin to be openly share about those things. But most importantly, to learn to love myself and to exhibit that. And that, boy, that's spending time with my grandkids and being able to, you know, love my son. And those are some things that I have done that sort of start breaking that. We have this thing in the African-American culture, especially in our faith walk, that says if you're broken in certain ways, it's not acceptable. And especially mental health is one of those things, you know what I mean? And I finally got tired of people telling me I was crazy, my faith wasn't strong enough. My faith is the only thing that has kept me here this far, okay? It never was my faith. It is no different than if someone who is a diabetic or whatever, there is something that doesn't work and you need help to make it work. And it's not that God can't, but if God did everything, then we wouldn't need other people's gifts. And that's true, you know what I mean? So those are some things that I've done to be able to deal with that.
So you've mentioned trying to reach out, you know, to yeah. other pastors or faith leaders. And I guess to put it mildly, whatever it was that they were telling you wasn't connecting to what you were experiencing.
Right.
So what was it that you were accustomed to hearing that proved insufficient?
Well, number one, my faith wasn't strong enough. Number two, I just need to pray about it. Give it to God, go. Those are the
biggest. Of course, you'd been doing that, I'm sure.
The whole time.
Yeah.
The whole time. I mean, you're doing that, you know. And then the other one was, just, you got to discount that. You know what I mean? Don't claim it. Whatever. Okay. That doesn't work. Okay. And sometimes it made me at first think that it really was my faith. But then I really realized that, no, it wasn't. And I started looking at various different, both biblical and leaders in recent history. I am bipolar. And looking at the fact that there's such a large number of our people who are extremely bright, geniuses, that have and deal with what I deal with, okay? So what's the difference? The difference is I think I was expecting transparency and understanding when I realized that little by little, they hadn't had anybody to talk to either. They were afraid. They hadn't dealt with it, and by me asking or talking about it, for a lot of them, I was opening up a can of worms that, oh man, we don't do that here. We don't do that in our culture. So be it. We can still lead in everything else, right? But we can't lead in knowledge and addressing our situations. So for a lot of them, I realized I just threw them off. It wasn't even that they didn't care. For others, I realized they didn't know. They really didn't. They didn't know what to say. Excuse me. So they responded, you know, in the same cliche-ish, you know, expressions that we've learned all through along, you know, through our lives. And that was their response, you know. But never an examination of what was he really talking about, because I can't handle that.
Okay. And I guess that's a good jumping off point for my next question, which is whether, you know, you have had the opportunity to mentor other people in your position who are, you know, going through similar stuff in your position. I mean, pastors or even just people in leadership positions,
right. Yes.
You know, who are weighed down by, you know, by all manner of day-to-day responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have. And it's really been a both a challenge and it's been a joy. First of all I want is someone that can listen to me in a non-judgmental fashion and just be there. And I knew I needed that, so I began to do that with others. And don't always have to have an answer. An open mind, a willing spirit, and a listening ear. And it's kind of what I've learned to do. And what it does is it creates a place to safe. And that's the whole goal. It creates a safe place where I know no matter what's going on, I can call and I can share with this person what is happening with me. And we can talk about it, pray about it, whatever we need to do to address it, we can do that. And when I walk away, I'm not going to hear it again, you know. And so being able to do that has been a great experience. The challenge comes when you have to learn to balance so that you can be that loving, caring person without purchasing their situation and buying it, okay? And you love and support, but you don't buy it. You don't own it, okay? But you own up to the love and everything you give. And that's the most challenging thing until you really learn that, you know. And allow a person, hey, you got to go through your journey just like I've gone through mine. Be able to let them be able to express and to see that. And then be a help. Assist with decision making, but don't make decisions for people. Okay? Because if right. you do, they're facing the things you don't ever see. So remember, they're only telling you part of the picture. Okay. That part that's missing, if you try to address that, it could be damaging. And so you address what is given, you know, because that person is going to go back into that environment and they have to live that. You know, in fact, I've developed a practice in my work that's called guidance. So I do guidance. You know, I'm certified pastoral counselor and everything, but I do guidance because I'm not going to live in it. You are. Just like I have to live in mine, okay? But most of the time, I don't need you to give me answers. I just want to kind of give me that, what they call it, mapping, Google Map. I just need somebody to just tell me some of the streets. If I start driving them, all of a sudden, oh, I'm here. Oh, I know a shortcut. Right. You know what I mean? But if nobody guides me, at least to the starting points to help me get started, then I'm just kind of in a whirlwind sometimes. And that's one of the ways that I work with a mentor of faith-based leaders and different people from all different walks of life.
Yeah, I mean, if I think I know anything, I think it's that when it comes to this subject, there's almost too much advice out there. Mm-hmm. And part of the challenge of getting on the road toward wellness is figuring out how to filter all of the advice that's coming at you.
That's right.
And being able to locate that intersection that's in your own hood.
Exactly. That's right.
And you know, having to cope with the fact that prior to that point, you know, the most vague navigation is about the best that anyone can do.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it sounds like.
It is. Yeah. It really is, because you don't. As my mother put it, if we would have known, we would have addressed these things, but, and so I told them, I said, yeah, don't feel guilty. You didn't know, okay? And who had a conversation about it? You know, and even just to mention the word mental health in our community, you know what that does. It's like, oh my God, that's taboo. So who really thought about it?
I mean, everyone's got that one uncle or that one.
Exactly.
That one cousin they don't talk about.
That's right.
Or they do so in hushed tones. And,
Oh yeah, yeah. Like I was always the quiet kid. I was a strange kid. Nobody ever associated that with depression. You know, I was the nervous kid. Nobody said that understood that was anxiety disorder. I mean, you don't associate these things, you know what I mean? And if you happen to be intelligent, you know, or smart, then it's, that's just the way people, that's the way they are, you know what I mean? And people will give you a pass on the rest of it, you know what I mean? And that's the way we talk. Look at the way we talk. Most of the time, we don't even talk in complete sentences. Hey, what's going on? I'm fine. What's going on? Yeah, I'm going to go over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we certainly don't sit down and have dialogues about things in our families.
Right.
We just don't.
Right. And about being brilliant, you know, if you're brilliant enough, mm-hmm. it may not come across to people just how much you're suffering.
Exactly.
You know.
That's exactly right.
Because, I mean, like, 6 days out of every seven, mm-hmm. you can get away with it.
Exactly.
You know, you're
that's right.
You're there at the pulpit.
That's right.
Doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Right. That's right.
And yeah.
That's right. But most people don't eat dinner with you.
Right. That's true.
For breakfast.
And you see things
exactly.
from the dinner table.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So it's very, very different, you know. And but yeah, that's very true. And I think the other thing is too is we have to learn to not love what we do so much until we don't love ourselves and don't love people around us enough to just be ourselves.
Right.
That's the main thing, just be myself. If I'm Pastor Q, I tell people all the time, Pastor Q is a handle. My name is Alvin James Quinton.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know that.
Exactly.
Now I do.
Exactly. Yeah. So when people get to know Alvin, okay, or AJ, my nickname is AJ, they'll get to know Pastor Q. So a lot of people know Pastor Q.
Yeah.
They have no clue about who AJ is.
Right. I introduced you as the pastor at Diakonos Ministries.
Right.
It's a Greek word.
Yes.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what it signifies.
Sure. It really means one who waits on tables. And so you have the high servant, which would be like, I don't know if everybody remembers Family Affair, Mr. French, or if you've seen the movies where the guy that's in the suit, he's in the vest and he's the tie, and he greets you at the front door, and good day, sir, and, you know, man, let me take your coat, and it's a high servant, okay? In biblical days, they had that type of servant, it was a high servant. But then they also had the servant that was a low servant, and that was the one that once you came in, that they would sit with the basin, you would sit with the basin and they would wash your feet. That was a diakonos type servant.
Okay.
Okay. They would be the ones that would wait on the tables and then stand to the side or go out. That lowly servant, you know, and it also means, you know, that one from the root word, diakonejo, which is to use the office of a deacon and where you get that diaconet. So it means basically servant. You know, and then as a servant, you become a teacher
mm-hmm.
of the finer skills in life.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's really what diakonos means. So it's diakonos. We have diakonos, a house of servants, which is the church. And then we have diakonos ministries, which is our soon to be our 501c3. And that was our founded name there. And we're going to work into all our other operations there. But yeah.
Okay. And, so, and how long is it? How long have the doors been open there?
10 years.
10 years. Okay.
We just celebrated 10 years on the 12th of June.
Mm-hmm.
10 years.
Okay. So here's a simple-minded question: how are you doing these days?
I am doing better than I ever have in my life. Okay. And even my struggles are different. You know, it's a real challenge that, as you said earlier, as we heal, and that's the word. Heal. It's not just dealing with the mental health or chemical imbalances or whatever. It is dealing with all of the damage that you have inflicted on yourself, on others, relationships, things that you have had happen with inside of you, that you have to go through the process of healing. So I go through the process of therapy, and I work with my psychiatrist, and then I have medication, which I take less now than I did when I started. You have to learn the skills, develop the skills. You have to really change the way that you think because you have been in this mindset of doing things one way to get one outcome, and now you have to be able to open yourself up to say, I'm not going to be afraid of this. This is what I'm going to do. So in a very simple way, I'm doing good. And then you even have to learn how to handle your crashes. And because like you said, you have good days. Every day is great. I'm just not feeling it all the time. Okay? But you learn to be able to deal with that. And you tell yourself, well, one thing is what I tell myself all the time, okay? I give myself permission, okay, to see what life is like, okay, on this side, because I've already lived that side. I know what that's like, okay? So what is it like to be free? What is it like to not have that depressive state of mind? And to be able to deal with the anxiety and all the things. What is it like to be balanced? I deserve to see that, and that's what I work toward. and that's what makes me feel good. And then I'm honest. So if someone says, you know, we always go, how you doing? Well, I'm doing good. You know, or, you know what? This is really not one of my better days, but I'm hanging in there.
Okay. You know. All right, so Pastor Q, I'm going to put you on the spot just a little bit and just ask if you've got any quick words of pastoral counsel for anyone who might be listening, that can in any way identify with your struggle, and then we'll wrap up.
Live your life. Okay, you only get one shot, and no matter what it is, discover you, discover what's going on. Okay, seek the path to healing, and live your life. So that there are no regrets, and enjoy the simple things. Those simple things are what I want to be the lasting memories as my mind fades from this world. And those are the things I can hold on to. And that's what I would tell anybody. And remember, there wouldn't be people with gifts if there wouldn't be people with needs.